This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Yeah, Nick Powell, we have this fantastic second unit director, stunt coordinator Nick Powell, who did Three Musketeers for us and was the main stunt guy on Bourne Identity. Everyone, a lot of stuntmen claim they did Bourne Identity. He did Bourne Identity. As well as Gladiator, Braveheart. He reminded me of, he was the guy responsible for the sequence when Mel Gibson comes into the village and takes revenge. He choreographed that whole fight. And Last Samurai. And he's a great part of our team. And what?
I think he did some Star Wars stuff.
Did he really?
I think Phantom Menace.
Wow.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Anyway, he's a very fierce Welshman.
Could you guys actually all say your names so we all have them?
Jeremy Bolt.
Don Carmody.
Robert Kaltzer.
So if I'm not mistaken, the last film ends with a boat, a lot of planes coming at them. It's a big climax. With this film, do you guys take a little bit of time, or do you guys sort of, like, is there like a, does it just jump right into the action?
Spoiler alert.
We're all under embargo anyway.
Yeah. Well, there's action. There is action.
That's good to know.
Action. Yeah. Non-stop.
You know, this film has a lot of twisting, turning moments. It's playing respectfully with the audience. We're trying to make people think a little bit. And although you'll really enjoy it if you've never seen a previous film, if you have seen the previous film, you'll enjoy it even more. It has that video game spirit where you have to engage a little bit.
But it doesn't rely too heavily. I mean, you're bringing lots of characters back from the past movies. So
yes.
Are people who have not seen the past movies still going to get it?
Yes. Yeah, which is why it's called Resident Evil Retribution, not Resident Evil 5. Hmm. And we obviously have brought in a lot of new characters from...
Yeah, so how does that work? How do you feel like you're kind of starting fresh, that anyone could come into the world at this point and yet still kind of throw back to all those older movies?
There will be a voiceover from Alice, who will set the world up. And new characters are properly introduced. You don't need to have played a game to know Leon Kennedy and Jill Valentine is coming back. And unlike the previous films, we actually have a sequence in very much in the real world, which is going to be an interesting part of this version of Resident Evil.
Would that be Odette's sequence?
He is in a part of that. It's actually quite difficult to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, right.
I'm just realizing. Yeah.
But I think everything's explained well enough so that even if you haven't seen the first few Resident Evils, you'll understand what's going on, you know, without too much confusion.
I think each movie has really defined itself kind of on Alice's mission, and she always is discovering something new in herself, which lends itself to the new adventure. How would you describe that arc for her and how that mirrors the movie, what you're going for with this installment to kind of differentiate itself from the rest?
I think you feel she's getting very close to the answer, if you like, of the whole Resident Evil franchise. We are within sight of the end, or at least something that we can think might be the end.
Is that something that you could... There's been a lot of talk about the building to a finale of the Resident Evil series. Is that something that any of you have in mind, or do you prefer to keep it open?
Can we talk about that?
They've mentioned a couple times that...
Well, I think
that fall already is six.
I think inevitably, you know, everything has to come to an end. The question is by your choosing, or if the audience decides it for you.
Yeah, right.
The market says, enough.
Yeah. Well, we had talked before Paul did Afterlife.
He had
mentioned something at Comic-Con about a new trilogy, because, you know, the third one had just wrapped up, and he was like, well, I envision a new trilogy. So, you know, I mean, beyond six, I mean, could you guys foresee doing a Resident Evil from different perspectives, a different angle from, like, maybe, you know, other characters, kind of like what Capcom is doing with the next Resident Evil game, which is kind of set in the world of 2, you know?
Yeah, I could see a prequel to 1. Yes. Definitely.
Setting it all up.
Yeah.
And possibly spinning out another character, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the really exciting thing for us as producers is when you have a franchise, and for Paul as a director, that works. It's so expensive to release a movie these days that it gives everyone confidence, so you try and get creative under the umbrella of the franchise, which is obviously something the studios are doing all the time. And so, yeah, we would definitely, if, as Robert said, the box office deserves it, we'd keep exploring it.
But going back, just really, how does this one differentiate from the rest of the series?
This is more science fiction-y.
Really?
This is more tricksy, turny, you know, plays respectfully with the audience. Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, probably the biggest action.
Biggest action.
Big car chase scene.
Big car chase.
About shooting that.
Yes, it was a lot of night work.
Yeah. A lot of cold night work.
Yeah.
Very loud machine guns.
Yeah, we kept a lot of people
up. Russian zombies drive motorcycles.
They've mutated. Yeah. They have the Las Plias parasite has enabled them to have a certain motor function and mental abilities. So the undead have evolved.
Much faster now.
Much faster, yeah.
So we just moved it from Africa to the streets of Moscow.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could elaborate on the kind of the good and the bad aspects of Oded's character and of Rain. He talked a bit about that. I believe those are the only two characters that have that kind of duality. So I wonder if you could elaborate on that a bit.
I think it's the idea is no one is who you think they are. Mm-hmm. The only thing you are certain of is that the Umbrella Corporation is all powerful and is always one step ahead, and Alice is the only one getting close. So we wanted to create an atmosphere where the audience go, is that person really Carlos, or is that person really Rain? Or, wow, and there's good Rain, and then there's good Carlos and bad Carlos. Again, it's this very much taken from the world of gaming where everything can change. So we are definitely, as I think Paul has done with the previous movies, taking narrative structure out of the video game world.
And we felt the last movie, you know, was quite linear. It was really, you know, pure action survival. And we felt that we had to definitely try something narratively from a structural point of view that would make it more of a mind bender for the audience, where you with Alice, you kind of go through the movie and you question everything. You know, even basically what you've seen so far over the four movies. And as it becomes this ongoing battle for survival of humanity, the question arises, you know, you might even find humanity in the least likely places. You know, even your enemies, to a certain degree, might have things that you need for survival. You know, so there might be alliances that, you know, in the story that Alice wouldn't have trusted, but in the sense of survival, she might have to make a bargain and then see how it goes.
But she is definitely fighting to hold on to her humanity. She has a relationship with a young girl, a child in the film, and there is definitely an echo of a mother-daughter. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a little bit of a Ripley daughter connection, but it's important for Alice, even though when you see the film, you might go, why is she doing this? Because it reminds...
It's much more broken down.
Yes.
In our case.
Yeah, much more broken.
You don't just have a mother or daughter.
No.
It has to be much more twisted.
Yeah, it's right. Very twisted. but she's focusing on it to hold on to remind herself of her humanity.
How much is the market guiding the direction of this franchise, i.e. the box office, rather than even you and Paul? Or is it kind of more a tandem of both entities, sort of? You know, as the last thing we did very well, in particular, you know, did well.
Well, we're in 3D again.
Right.
The thing that we've tried, all of us, in every version of the film, is to use different environments. Mm-hmm. And that has worked for us. So, you know, you're in the desert in RE3, you're in the city in RE2. So, again, here, we are using different environments. Paul believes you've got to give the viewers the promise of something different. When they see the first materials, I think a number of franchises make the mistake of just making it feel like the same. This will feel totally different.
Yeah, and they've all felt that way.
Yeah.
So. But there's definitely feedback coming from the international distributors,
yeah.
Where you go, you know, the movie performs so strong internationally that you say, well, is there a way to make it more of a global phenomenon than just, you know, set it in one location, you know, whereas we were in Brooklyn City, or we were in Vegas, or we were in Los Angeles, you know, is there a scenario where it allows us to literally make it a global event?
Kind of piggybacking off that, when you have a franchise that's so malleable that you can play in lots of different genres, are there films that you love that you mentioned this is kind of like a sci-fi edge to it? Are there films that you love that you want kind of drew ideas from, or how to make it a sci-fi film?
Well, I think like any filmmaker, Inception was a huge, had a big impact on everyone. Mm-hmm. I think Westworld is an important film for Paul. Everyone knows because he talks about it enough. The whole Alien trilogy.
Yes, exactly. Alien.
Blade Runner. Yeah. I mean, all these things are inspiration, but I think as a filmmaker, he just keeps trying to push himself and do better than the last one and just make it entertaining to as many people as possible. But I think, just taking up on Robert's point, there are sequences in Moscow, there are sequences in Tokyo. You know, we've really tried to make it global.
Obviously an open door kind of relationship with Capcom. Communication's always open with those guys. What was their reaction when you finally came to them and said, we need two of the big characters, Leon and Barry, which obviously the fans have been clamoring for?
And Ada Wong.
Yeah, and Ada Wong,
yeah. Of course.
We have a great relationship, so it's very much who are you going to cast, and do they look like the character?
Yeah.
And they were very, very pleased with all of our choices. They particularly Li Bingbing, who plays Ada Wong. They visited us on set last week, and they were just really blown away by her.
And the question we always ask when we're on the set of this thing is: are you guys any closer to maybe doing like some of a Capcom game that's closer to the series?
You know, it's
I think we're stealing from each other.
Yeah,
yeah.
In a good way. Yeah. But I think it's it's two different worlds, and they are so good at what they're doing, and we try to do our thing. And I think we want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
As producers of this film, and you know, it's a big movie, and you said that it tops the others in terms of action. On a 55-day shoot, what element of that has been the most challenging?
Everything.
Is there one set piece in general, or one sort of?
But I think the one that we're shooting right now, the tech guys. Mm-hmm. It was in the script. It read it like a $50 million sequence, and you know we have a week first unit and a couple of days of second unit to do it. So it requires a lot of attention from all the departments.
Yeah,
it's really challenging.
Well, as you can see, I mean, before we even yell action, we're yelling, roll this, roll that, roll this, roll... I mean, there's, 15 different things that have to happen before the actors can start talking.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a challenge. But all of the sequences have been very challenging. This car chase in Moscow is like, when you see it, it's astonishing. It's really, really cool. Mm-hmm. So
The movie seemed to be getting, if I'm not mistaken, the box office on all of them have been going up and up and up. For the last few, including this one, are the budgets basically the same?
No.
No?
They get higher. Because everyone gets more expensive, including us.
We're the least of the budget wars. Right.
No, let's blame it on the currency.
Yeah, currency exchange.
Currency, yeah.
Toronto dollar even
now. What kind of say does do you hear from Screen Gems? I mean, obviously international box office informs some things, and, there are other aspects, but does Screen Gems ever kind of lay down certain mandates to say, hey, we're looking for more of this,
They ideally would want it to do just as much box office, or maybe more.
That's
the biggest mandate.
Yeah.
No, they're very trusting of us and Paul.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
I mean, they really, they see this as, we know what we're doing, the box office has increased, they want to give us the freedom to do that, and they're pretty great to work with, and I must say their marketing department is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's such a godsend for a producer when you know you've got a distributor who knows how to market a film.
Yeah,
because that's the one piece of the pie we can't really control.
No, but I mean they are very much involved in the script. So once the script is approved, that's a big hurdle. And obviously trying to find the right budget number, and then they know once the number has been agreed on, then we try to stick to it,
mm-hmm.
and then casting.
Yeah,
so. And also, keeping it interesting. So with each movie, we try to bring in new people or bringing you know, bring back people from the previous movies, and they obviously are engaged in, you know, making it the best possible movie for the prize.
Are you considering bringing Tom and Dandy back for the score?
Yes, they are doing the score.
They're doing it. Yes.
Yeah, I love that score. That was great.
Yeah.
They'll be here Thursday.
Yeah.
Is there a new breed or reiteration of a previously existing creature that you guys are particularly excited about?
Yes. Bigger.
It's gotten bigger.
It's gotten bigger.
Way bigger.
Okay.
We're doing it properly.
Can you talk about working with Paul and Mila for over 10 years, how you've all changed, kind of grown together? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Paul and Mila have developed a close relationship. Just how, you know, this 10-year journey from beginning to end, just drawing a line between the 10 years.
Well, I think for Don and I have worked together for like 5 years now. Robert and I have done 10 years on the film.
Oh,
so we've all mm-hmm. been part of this.
Right.
But I would say Mila has... She's always had a very fierce core. She's if there's anybody who could take on an alien, it's probably her. And I would say that core has evolved. So now there's a strength and a toughness to her, but there's also a strong sense of her being a leader. I think you could definitely see her leading everyone against Umbrella and literally saving humanity. And Paul has evolved from being he's always obviously loved the world that we're in, and he's always loved the technical aspects of it. But I think it's been very interesting because as Mila's evolved, he's been very much part of that, and obviously they fall in love and got married. So there's a total synergy between filmmaker and the iconic leading lady. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really part of the reason the franchise has worked. Awesome. You know, from our point of view, essentially Mila is like a third partner. And from my point of view, that was interesting because I've been partners with Paul for 20 years, and she's the other, you know, she's now essentially a partner in this as well.
Nobody knows Alice better than Alice.
Yeah.
So she probably knows that character even better than Paul.
Yeah. So. It's interesting when we negotiate her deal, of course, because Paul's got a little bit of a conflict of interest. Has his producer hat on, then his husband hat on.
Yeah.
No, but it's really interesting because, you know, going back to the first one now, it really feels like it was meant to be because we didn't really cast her. You know, she cast us. You know, she basically was lobbying, you know, I want to be this character and I want this role, and, you know, you almost had like no other choice but to take her, you know. So it was, and now looking back, I mean, she's become a really, you know, integral part in the, you know, obviously in front of the camera, but also behind the camera, and she's doing a really good job.
There's a lot of are there any surprises? Like Paul has revealed a lot, and Mila's talked, and we know a lot of the characters that are in the film, but are there other characters that have not yet been announced that might be making an appearance that have still been under the radar?
Reveal secrets.
Yeah, right.
I never said you had to tell specifically. I'm just, you know.
Well, to piggyback your question, it seems like you guys are kind of going back in time just a little bit. So might we see the character that was in Resident Evil 1 that was supposed to be her quote-unquote husband or her boyfriend from that movie?
No.
No? Okay, he's not back.
You won't see James Purefoy?
Yes.
You won't see him.
Yeah.
But there's definitely elements from Res 1 have come into this, yeah. And, you know, that's where it all began. And as I said, it's now... Yes, Paul has another version, another movie in his mind, which would be the completion of this cycle. So we're sort of moving towards that. And that will connect in some way with the first film.
Mm-hmm. Last time on set, you were really excited about the zombie dogs. Which zombies are you equally excited about this time?
Well, I mean, the Russian motorbike undeads are phenomenal.
Yep.
I mean, they're in their communist uniforms on the motorbikes, great makeup from Paul Jones. They're just terrific. And I mean, obviously, it's more enjoyable for us, having done it for so long now, that the undeads are getting a bit more intelligent. Because after a while, you feel sorry for them. I mean, there's not much there.
Shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your new venture with Paul on this found footage project?
Not really.
No.
It's very early days.
Oh,
yeah.
Can we grab another question if there are any, and gentlemen get back to work?
Yeah, I would like to go back to my first question about how the movie how the movie begins, because I mean, you guys do set up is a big ending on the fourth one with like 100 planes coming in.
We are not copping out of it.
You will not be disappointed.
Yeah, right.
It will be the Pearl Harbor of zombie movies.
And that's how it opens?
Maybe. In one way, it does.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Getting all lost on
it. No, it's true. By the way, that's another. There's another. There's another. Yeah, Michel's in the movie. There's another. There's a Lost has been influenced.
Well, yeah.
No, I was just going to say, because you do when you set up something like that, the audience sometimes, you know, wants that payoff.
Yeah. They'll be satisfied.
Yeah.
But it may not be in the linear way that they are expecting. As Robert was saying, we've played around with the narrative.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Nice to see you.